Michael Winslow, just in case you were still wondering.
Is his actual name?
Yeah, it's his actual name.
Yeah, no, I wasn't wondering.
Okay.
That's the Police Academy guy.
Billed as Police Academy's Man of 10,000 Noises.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Michael Winslow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's even got YouTube videos.
I call him Mike.
Yeah, well, that's because you're on a first noise basis with him.
Oh, no.
See how I did that?
Yeah, I'm using that. I'll bet you wish you hadn't said that out loud. Hello and welcome to episode 214 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is
Adam.
Enough
Vancouver.
About you, Adam.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Enough.
Yeah.
We're moving on. We have a guest, a brand new guest this week.
You don't even want to know where I'm from, though?
Yeah, no, we know.
Okay.
I thought this might be one of the weeks where you don't. Never mind. Never mind. Hello, Darlene.
Hi, how are you?
Welcoming Darlene Hildebrandt to the show. And you know her from?
From my own website, which is digitalphotomentor.com, and also Digital Photography School, you know, a small photography website that I happen to be the managing editor for.
I have been reading that site for at least 30 years. It's been...
Wow.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Sure. Although it came on the web in 2006, but sure.
Okay, then...
Maybe you read really slow.
Could be. No, but in all honesty, I have... That's one of the first websites I probably came across way back when I learned what a website was. Probably sometimes around 2008, I'm going to guess. So it's been a long time. I'm one of my favorite websites.
Well, I'm glad you're reading.
Adam.
Yes.
Have you heard of it?
Yes. I've also been to it many times.
I think I forwarded it to Adam way, way, way back.
No, never did. Just happened to come across. It's one of those things where when I was first learning, just looking up, just doing Google searches of, tips for portrait taking or tips for insert whatever your interest in photography is. It usually pops up as one of the first couple. So, yeah, been there, read many articles there.
Well, we got something like 5,000 articles archived, so you can probably find what you're looking for.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And have you been there since 2006?
No. I started writing for DPS, I think 3 years ago now. And then I became a regular writer, and just over a year ago, so November 2012, I started doing the managing editor position. So I've been doing that just over a year.
That sounds great. And how long have you been taking photos?
Oh, my. A lot longer.
Sure.
I've been doing photography professionally since, well, let's say 25 plus years. I had a portrait wedding studio back in the day, shot film even, if you can remember what film is. And I've been teaching for about 4 years now. I really love the teaching aspect as well.
And so you're from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
I am, and it is freezing here today and snowing.
It's also freezing here in Tübingen, Germany. Adam?
Raining here. Of Not course. Cold, but very, very rainy these days.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. So you used to run a wedding photography studio.
I did.
And that was all on film as well?
At the time, yeah, mostly at the time. And then 2002, divorced my partner, so kind of made it difficult to carry on with the business together. And he carried on, and I moved into doing other things.
Okay, and so what kind of film would you shoot back then? Like, what kind of camera? I know camera doesn't matter. I'm just kind of curious on my own.
Well, back in the film days, I got it in the closet. You want to buy it? It's a Hasselblad.
I have to run that past the wife first.
Yeah, Hasselblad, medium format film. Just started getting into some 35 mil sort of at that 2002 edge. And then by 2004, I was fully digital.
Wow, that's early.
You think?
2004. Well, yeah, well, that was I think the kind of the cut point where, like, I noticed a lot of, because I was shooting wedding videos at the time.
Okay.
And that's where I noticed the transition. People started making the transition around 2001.
Yep.
And I wasn't sold then, like, my personally. You know, I would see the photographer come out and on the wedding I was working on. And I think they were still shooting at the time. I think they were getting maybe 3 megapixel images.
Yep.
And it was still, I wouldn't be spending my money there. But it was around 2004 where it made the big jump. Where it was,
well, I jumped in with Canon 10Ds. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, 6 months later, they came out with the 20D, which was, I think the 10D was 6 megapixels, and then the 20 came out and it was 8.
Yeah.
And it was cheaper than what I had just paid for my 10, so I was a little choked.
But that was the long road of that continuing to happen for the next 10, 15 years.
Well, exactly, and it still is. You know, you got to jump in at some point, so.
Yeah.
I just made the decision and took the leap. And I was kind of one of those people where, like, I know people at the time that were shooting some film and some digital. What a disaster that was. Like, I tried that once and I was like, okay, that's a stupid idea. So I just went fully digital. Got to commit. Do it.
Yep. And the 20D was the first digital camera I ever shot with. I had rented it. Because at the time, like, they were still very, very pricey.
Yep.
Relatively speaking. Especially compared to what you can get for now, and so I'd rented it. I remember it was for Major League Baseball actually, and I had zero experience with off camera flash and whatnot. But they asked me, and I, of course, when Major League Baseball phones, you just sure, I'll take it.
Yeah,
and they didn't call back. there was a player from. He's from the Vancouver area. A guy named Justin Morneau, and he just won the MVP, the American League MVP, and he was back in Canada for something. And they sent me out, and I thought, oh, hey, great! I'll just go and fake it. You know, why not? I wish I had known what I was doing. It would have been a lot better job. It was the 20D, and then shortly thereafter, I actually bought my own 40D, and that was my entrance into the digital world. And then I for a long time didn't look back because I was a film guy too. I shot film since I was a little kid. My dad had some Canon cameras.
Hey darling, glad you're interviewing Al. That's great. great to hear. Nobody's heard any of this before either, by the way.
We call this relating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is continue, please. Please continue.
Inserting it.
Character development.
Yes. Okay. All right, Adam, I'm going to take 5 and just listen to what you have.
So what are you doing these days, Darlene?
Do you like remote-controlled cars, Darlene?
Can't say that I've tried any.
You should try.
But I'm keen to try a drone, though. Maybe we shouldn't go there.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't. We shouldn't go there.
No, I want one, too.
Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now these days. Where your specialty is?
My specialty, I mentioned teaching, and that's kind of where I'm spend most of my time these days is writing on my own site. I created a couple of online courses, so working on promoting those, and we also run a couple of photography tours. So when we first got in touch, I was in Nicaragua because I ran a tour there in November, and actually stayed for 2.5 months because I like it there so much, and then. I just got back from Cuba like 5 days ago, so I'm not really enjoying the snow very much. So because I've been in the tropics, so we take people to exotic locations and we do lots of fun photo stuff when we get there.
And how does that work? Like that's all done through your website. There's basically information that sort of says, oh, here's what the trip is, how long it is, how much it is. That's all on your website.
All of that on the website, yeah. DigitalPhotoMentor.com. They can get information on the photography tours section.
Right. And just in terms of the range of photographer that you're getting on there, I'm guessing that there's probably quite an array, but are these more of the advanced type photographers that are generally speaking the ones who are on the store?
Not necessarily. We've done both tours twice now, and I've had a range from people with point and shoots who've come along with a friend. So we have some spouses that come that aren't photographers and they just have a little point and shoot or using their phone. And we've had a couple of pros come along on the last trip. So everything and everywhere in between.
And I know you said you stayed 2.5 months, but how long typically would one of these trips be for somebody signing up?
They're 2 weeks, 13 days in Nicaragua, and I think 11 in Cuba.
Right. Okay.
And is it about Cuba everybody keeps talking about photographing Cuba.
Oh, it's just visually, it's almost visual overload. Like there's so much to photograph there. Like there's the old cars, right? You got the 50s Chevys and stuff, you know, like one of the things we do with the group is we rent convertibles for a few hours in Havana. Mm-hmm. And we drive around the city. So we not only get the experience of driving around in the cars, but we had a couple of models come with us this time. So we did a little model shoot in the forest with the cars and the models. And we put the cars on the beach at sunset, you know, so we got a great experience. We're driving around in like a Ford Fairlane, you know, wow. So tons of stuff to photograph. The people are great. People talk about how crappy the food is in Cuba. And sorry, I'm all allergic. The food that we have, we don't go to the resorts. We stay in casas for the most part, which is like a B&B. And we eat there sometimes and in smaller restaurants. And like everybody said that they came home and their pants were tight. So that tells you how good the food was.
I've never heard that the food was bad in Cuba.
I heard the resorts that the food definitely is somewhat lacking.
Is that true? Huh.
Yeah.
No, I know everyone that I know personally who's been to Cuba raves about it, and a lot of photographers online for the reasons you say. And it's not just that. From what I gather, it's just the quality of light, too. I mean, there's colors everywhere. There's the old cars. I'm told it's kind of like stepping into a time machine. Like the big, I guess one of the most popular cars is like the 57 Chevy that everybody loves.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I mean, and they're in varying conditions of shape. Like some are, you know, covered in Bondo and duct tape, and then others are almost pristine condition and been completely restored. And I mean, part of it is they've had to do that because for so long they didn't have access to anything from the outside world. And it's a weird mix now because there's a lot of Ladas driving around, which are a complete piece of garbage,
right?
And then now they're getting a lot of stuff from China. So like the bus that we had, for example, like the first time we went expecting, you know, like one of these like a Mexican bus, you know, like bullet holes and all this stuff, and it was a brand new Chinese bus with air conditioning and a fridge, and we're like, oh well, this doesn't suck. So yeah, there's this real sort of like dichotomy going on because there are brand new cars and there are people with money, and it's starting to come around a bit more. Like the Cuban government is opening up, allowing the people to do more commerce and have more business, and it's showing because there's more restaurants now, and there's just more enterprise that you see happening. People are selling stuff everywhere.
And how many trips a year do you do to Cuba?
One to Cuba and one to Nicaragua.
I see. Now, is that you? What's the outlook now that the U.S. sort of relaxed their relations with Cuba? Can you imagine a lot more people from the States joining these tours?
Well, I think it's already changing. Like in Havana, they're building a cruise port. So the regular port for like cargo ships is being moved up island a little bit. So the cruise ships will come right into Havana. Mm-hmm. And that is going to change everything. So just talking with our guide and some other locals, like they're already talking about money coming into the country to change infrastructure, to improve things like internet. I mean, they have internet, but it's really crappy. It's almost like dial-up. It's really slow and it's like really expensive, like $5 an hour. Okay. The roads could use some work, and anything that has to do with tourism, you know, like hotels and things like that, just improving it so that when people come, they, particularly, I guess, Americans, they're assuming they have a certain standard that they want to try and uphold, which is, you know, if you read any reviews on TripAdvisor, if there's like a chain hotel, they'll be like, oh, it's not the same as the one I stayed at in Europe. Well, you're not in Europe. You're in Cuba, right?
Right.
So they're just trying to bring that standard up.
And Nicaragua, how did you get started going to Nicaragua?
Actually, it's a funny story because a friend of ours went there. And he posted a video of a thing he did. He went to serve lunch in a garbage dump to people that live in the garbage dump. And he posted it on YouTube. And I saw his video, and I was really touched by it. And so we got in touch with the place where he was staying. And it just made sense to take our groups there. The reason I liked that is... In 2007, I went to Peru, and part of what we did there with the small group I was with of eight ladies is we did some charity stuff. Like we went up into the mountains, and we gave shoes to the kids, and we cooked, you know, lunch for them, stuff like that. And we wanted to incorporate some of those aspects into our tours, where we're actually giving back to the locals. And our demographic of who comes with us is, you know, people who are, you know, 45 plus, have some discretionary income and want to do something good with it as well.
And so Nicaragua it is.
And it's one of the poorest countries in Central America. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of safety, it's also one of the safest, way safer than, you know, Honduras or El Salvador, the ones to the north, but not as expensive as, say, Costa Rica and not as touristy.
Gotcha. And you said you were launching a video on portrait lighting.
Yes, we already launched it. We've had it out for a while. It's portrait lighting on location, and I have a partner. My partner and I go through everything from basics of like exposure. I mean, I go real basic, like exposure triangle and all that stuff, to lighting patterns and using natural light. And then he does the second half of the course, which was incorporating flash. So you mentioned, you know, that you had some early on, you had some issues with using off-camera flash. That's part he does. So talks about equipment, setting it up, you know, balancing ambient and flash, all of that stuff that people have lots of questions about.
So now do you take that kind of equipment with you to Nicaragua and Cuba?
I didn't take any flash stuff. I do generally take a reflector with me. And depends on the group and how much time we're going to have. Like we actually did portraits in Cuba last time. I tend to do my portraits using natural light whenever possible, and I find the good light and use it to my advantage. So that's what I teach my students as well.
Right. Good to hear. So, Adam, what's going on?
What do you mean?
In life. Well, this is our section of what we say, what's going on. I had no segue there. Do you want a better segue?
Yeah, better segue, please.
Okay. Hey, Adam.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Not a whole lot, buddy.
I got nothing either, but
I got nothing. I got nothing.
I wanted the float. When I wrote the notes for the show a couple days ago, it was a rumor, but then I guess it was just announced that Canon's going to come out with a 50 megapixel camera.
Really?
That's what I hear.
Wow. Not going to buy that.
No. I know very little about it. Just the fact that once I saw 50 MP, I was good.
Yeah.
I shut her down because I thought when like I shoot with the Canon 5D Mark II, and I thought 21 megapixels was excessive.
Right.
It's 21, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's what it is. I actually lose track because I don't actually care. I thought 21 was excessive, but 50 sounds... Is there a practical reason for 50 megapixels that you know of, Darlene?
Well, aren't the medium format ones in that range? I've never used a digital medium format, but I have friends of mine who do commercial work, like things like billboards and, you know, giant posters and things, and they use medium format. I think they're up in that range, so maybe Canon's trying to compete in the digital, like the medium format market. Because I think what's happening is I actually worked in a camera store for a little while a few years ago, and we actually saw a trend towards point and shoots disappearing. And I actually bought a little Panasonic right before Cuba because I invested in the Fuji X-T1 system before Nicaragua, and I had an issue with it there, and it went back for repair, and long story, but make a long story short, they replaced the motherboard, gave it back to me, and I took it to Cuba, but I wanted something for backup, right? But I didn't want to haul my 5D Mark III as a backup because it kind of defeats the purpose of going smaller, right? Mm-hmm. So I took the Fuji and the little Panasonic Lumix point-and-shoot, which actually was really good. I was really impressed with it. But we're seeing a trend, I think, to point-and-shoots disappearing because phones are that good with their cameras, right? Like, there's Sony phones that have 20 megapixel cameras in the phone. I was just looking at the other day because I need a new phone. And I think that the middle ground, which is the DSLRs, they're trying to distinguish themselves more. So maybe that's where Canon's trying to go, is they're losing that middle market and they want the high-end market.
Huh, interesting. I had never thought of it that way. I never thought that point-and-shoots would disappear entirely, because I'm one of those the three guys who just doesn't have a phone, and so I don't think in those terms. But I can't imagine hauling, you know, a regular point-and-shoot around if you do have the phone, unless you have Adam's waterproof one.
Yeah. What's the price point on the 50-megapixel camera?
That's a good question.
I saw something around like $3,600 US.
Okay. But so I agree probably with Darlene's analysis in that it's probably not aimed to the average user. That's aimed to the pro potentially who's wanting to convert to digital, who may have been using medium format for some of the work you were saying. Because yeah, who's buying that? Who what average consumer is buying that?
I honestly don't know, because for me the whole appeal of medium format is the large negative size,
right?
Mm-hmm. Or large sensor size, I guess in this case. Because you know I still shoot 35 millimeter black and white, and am about to move up to medium format that I process here at home, and there's a reason for it. I don't want to just, you know, I could technically, I guess, just scan my 35 mil negatives at a higher rate. It's not the same as having that big image. So I mean, for me, I can't see it competing. Obviously Canon, they're probably doing better financially than I am, so they don't care what I think. But I see, for me, I would like to see steps made, you know, in the possibly in the frames per second, you know, realm, because you want to shoot, you know, full frame sports. That's where it gets expensive. That's where you have to buy the, what is it, the 1DS or whatever,
and that, yeah,
a higher frame rate. And I would also like to see, you know, steps made in the video realm. You know, losing the like an actual 24 frames per second shutter instead of the Jell-O effect. So they're not aiming at me, that's for sure.
Well, I think if we go back to, you guys mentioned film, right? Like in when I was doing weddings and shooting film, sort of, you know, let's say late 90s, right? There was a bigger difference between the consumer who had a little point and shoot camera with, you know, 35 mil film, or even like that 110 film, right? Mm-hmm. And people who were doing stuff professionally, because most pros were still using like medium format or even large format. Like I had a 4x5 camera when I did commercial work in the studio. And so there was a bigger difference. And I think what's happened now is there's less of a difference, you know, and the barrier to entry is much lower, and people can buy an SLR for, you know, with a lens or two, for $1,500. Look at the Sony A6000, right? You can buy that for $600, put a lens on, a couple of lenses on. You got a pretty nice kit for $1,000.
Yep. And you can also, I think you can throw the old Minolta lenses on there, can't you?
Probably.
Maybe. Okay, Adam, Google that while we...
Okay, all right.
Grown-ups are talking. It's,
yeah, sure.
No, I think my friend
has... You're not calling yourself a grown-up, are you?
Yes.
Okay.
I really just tried to slip that past you.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, I think he has the Sony, and I think it's the old... I'm going to say the Minolta lenses that fit on. So, which you can find for almost nothing.
Yeah.
You know, which is you can expand your kit and... get really great images. I also think that, again, this is just my opinion, that people's sort of threshold for what's considered a good snapshot is lower than it used to be. Judging by Facebook, and Adam and I have talked about this many times, but what we see on Facebook where people are liking each other's photos, that we think, wow, that's not even in focus.
take it a step farther and go to Flickr, and there's a lot of stuff on there that has how many likes and awards and trophies and, oh my God, this is amazing, and it's complete garbage.
Right. Yep. So no 50 megapixel for me, Adam?
Nope. Take a pass.
Okay.
I'll pass too.
Good. So, sorry, Ken. Did you shoot anything interesting this week? I'll start with no.
I shot one thing that was interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll go to Darlene last because I think she has the big ones. The big shot something interesting this week. So, Adam, what did you shoot that was interesting?
There was a raccoon. Actually, there was two raccoons in my backyard on the fence.
Oh, did you not understand the question?
And no, it was interesting. Like I got out the 70 to 200 and stood on my back porch, maybe, I don't know, 10 feet from them. And they are not scared by people, but they were going for some of the food in the bird feeder in my neighbor's yard. So they kind of walked along the fence, stopped, stared right at me. I grabbed the camera, got in tight on them. And I got a couple of neat looking shots. Just the way the light was on the fence and the time of day and the tree kind of shading some of the light. Got a few photos. Haven't posted anything, but I put them in black and white, and just the contrast with the fur and the staring right at the camera was kind of neat. And it's the sort of thing I never do. Like I shoot people almost, I don't know, 99.8% of the time. And so I actually was considering using a raccoon shot as the portrait picture, mm-hmm. but then I decided not to. So I went with a person. I thought, no, that's kind of a little bit silly. So
did the raccoon have nice, like, loop lighting or?
I lost everything in there. Yeah, dropped out the audio for
Skype dropped out on both of us there.
So I did not hear the question.
Oh, sorry. I said, did the raccoon have really nice loop lighting on his face?
You can explain that to me because I'm not sure what that means.
Oh, well, then so you need to take my course.
Oh, great. Where do I sign up?
We'll put a link to it on the
I'll give you a link. Yeah, I'll give you a link.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about Darlene's interesting photos because really that's what we're here for.
I got two. Are you ready for it? So I got two. So in Trinidad, which is in Cuba, that's one of the places that we stopped. It's a really interesting town, lots of things to photograph. We, our guide and I arranged for four professional models to come just for our group to do like a practice. They came and they put their makeup on, so we got shots of them getting ready. They put their costumes on, so full like show costumes, and then they did like a 1 hour dance for us. So we just said, you know, stand here, and it happened to be in this like old crumbling like 300-year-old building that we photographed them in.
Nice.
What time of day was that?
Well, unfortunately it was midday, so we chose a place that had a roof so we didn't have that sun coming in. And then we had light coming in the sides. It was actually really, really decent light coming in there. And I've seen some of the shots that people were getting. And I've seen one lady's shots where she actually blurred the motion. Like, you know, if you can imagine the costume kind of flowing around and the girl's face is sharp, but the costume is flowing. So got some pretty good shots. And then the other interesting thing that I saw was in Havana. I was just wandering around by myself. The tour had gone and we were there for a couple extra days. I saw a man selling a rooster, like a fighting rooster, to another guy, and they were in this heated discussion about this rooster, and they took him out of the cage and, you know, held him upside down and looked at him, and I got all these photos of these guys making this transaction.
And how did little Jerry Seinfeld do?
That was exactly what I was thinking. Actually, I was picturing the rooster with little boxing gloves on.
Well, I don't know. There was three of them in these cages, and they had their legs had no feathers, and they had no feathers halfway up their bodies. It was really weird.
Mm. And you find the people in Cuba are generally open to having like their photos taken?
Oh, yeah, they love it. I mean, in Havana, there's actually lots of people that dress up in costume, and they've got the big cigars, and if you go on Flickr and Google and over again. Because that's kind of how they make their living, actually, is they just dress up and make their living from tips from people taking photos. Oh, okay. So there are some that want money, and if you take their photo, they will demand money. But then there's lots of others. Like we went, you know, to smaller smaller places like the Vignales Valley, which is where the tobacco is all grown, and wander around there. And most people are really happy to have their picture taken, especially if you show it to them, even on the back afterwards. There was a parade that happened in Trinidad. We were there, and it happened to be like a national holiday or something. And we're having our breakfast, and we hear like a parade going by outside the house where we're staying. So I go out, and there's these school kids, like hundreds of these school kids in, you know, parade like costumes, right? Majorette costumes and drums and all this stuff. And I took a photo of these two ladies with their kids that were all dressed up. And then she asked me to wait. My Spanish is okay, not great, but it's okay. And she ran and got a piece of paper, and she like wrote down her address and everything, and she wants me to send her a photo. So oh, wow. I have to like send this lady a print now. Yeah.
That's never happened to me specifically, like sending a physical print. I get requests for the email version, but
well, they don't have in Cuba they don't have computers. Right. They don't really have internet. There's internet in the hotels, but like I said, it's expensive and it's not really accessible by the average person. You know, like the average wage there is about $30 to $40 a month, like our, you know, US dollars a month kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they work on the Cuban peso, which is less, you know, they have it's interesting because, you know, you think, okay, Nicaragua and Cuba are both very poor countries in people's minds, right? And in many ways, the Cubans are not, they don't seem as poor as Nicaragua. And there's this interesting difference. Like in Cuba, I mean, it's a communist, you know, country or socialist country, and they have free healthcare, they have free school, you know, they can go to university for free, right? Mm-hmm. And a conversation with our guide, like last year, she said, there's no reason why anybody in Cuba should be homeless because everybody has the same opportunities. You could go to school, you could start a business, you could, you know, do all these things. And the literacy rate in Cuba is like 95%, right? Go to Nicaragua, it's like 40%.
Wow.
Big difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you send the print to her?
I haven't yet.
Oh, no.
Oh no!
No, I've only been home for a couple of days and backed it up, but I haven't had time to process yet because I'm doing all these podcast interviews.
Of course. Well, yeah. Sorry to keep you.
Well, I could be processing while we talk. You know, I could just fire up Lightroom.
That's kind of what I do. Yeah,
reading comic books. Yeah. Hungarian wedding comic books.
Nice. Yeah.
Right.
We actually went to a Russian restaurant in Havana. Believe it or not.
Wow.
If that sounds weird. Yeah.
Well, they must. Yeah. Okay. It makes sense that they would.
Because there's a lot of Russians living there, right? I mean, for the longest time, they were the only country that did trade with them, right? And a lot of ladies came, and, you know, consequently, there were babies, right? So there's a lot of Russian descent and descendants in Cuba. And so we went to this Russian restaurant, and I'd seen it on TripAdvisor, and then we just happened to find it. We paid, I kid you not, $20. We had three hot appetizers that were easily a meal each. The largest cabbage rolls I've ever seen in my life. They were as big as my head almost. And a drink each. I think my husband had two drinks and it was $20.
Nice.
Wow. Yep. Seriously good food.
Worth going to Cuba for the Russian.
I will go there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll go just for that.
And it had a view of the Malecon, which is like the walk along the ocean wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really nice.
See, the bulk of my Cuba, that my knowledge comes from, you know, The Godfather 2, and then A Few Good Men. So that in between there, I don't really know much about anything.
There's a lot of history in Havana, specifically with mafia stuff. Like the National Hotel and the hotel where we stayed, which is Capri, there was a lot of mafia connections there. We went to this one bar called Sloppy Joe's, which apparently where they all hung out, you know, in the 30s, 40s kind of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of mafia history there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds like great opportunities to shoot, so... This week's photo challenge, Adam, it was issued in anticipation of Darlene coming on the show because she has the portrait lighting videos coming out that are now out. Sorry, when we first got in touch, they were about to be released. Okay, that's my frame of reference. So this week's was portrait, which we've done before, but we're going to redo it. So, Adam, let's go with yours first.
Okay.
Let's go with the guest first.
Up to you, man.
Let's go with the guest first. Darlene, let's have a look at your photo first. So what are we looking at here?
That is a photo of my friend Carlos that was taken in Nicaragua. And he's actually the bartender at the place that we stay in a little town called Jicalillo. It's in the middle of nowhere in Nicaragua. And we stay there because we have connections to doing a lot of the charity stuff that I mentioned. And also the sea turtles hatch up in that area. So we got to see sea turtles and release the baby sea turtles. Very cool. So Carlos is the bartender and I love him to pieces. And he agreed to pose for our group because I was doing a little lighting lesson with our tour group. So that is one of the portraits I took of him while he was posing for our group.
So when you say lighting, is this a window light coming in?
That's actually outdoors. So we're sitting on a patio. And so, yeah, there's light coming in sort of from the outer edges of the patio. Mm-hmm. But there's a roof over top, so it's blocking the overhead light. So you get the nice side light coming in.
Right.
So that's all natural. There's no reflector. There's no flash. There's no nothing there.
Great. So, but it's nice to find that open shade when you have like a nice cut point where it can behave as window light, coming in from this in the side like that.
Open shade is my favorite thing.
Mine too. That's definitely what I look for. I specifically like the colors in this, like the yellow around the window, and the way it kind of drops down on that side. And to me, like, this is a really unconventional kind of pose. Generally, you know, when you read about, should I let my daughter in? She just keeps knocking on the door.
No, it's good sound effect.
Yeah, that's great. sweetie, cut right in the middle of the show. She's 19.
This is how we do it, Darlene. This is kind of peek behind the curtain right now. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's great.
Usually he yells at her something in German.
I can do that now if you like, but the surprise is gone.
You were saying
that typically, like when you read about the technique of how to take a portrait, this is very atypical. Generally, having your subject kind of looking off to the side to the right hand side of the image while being cropped there, oftentimes can not work. I feel like that's the opposite in this case. It looks really good the way the light's coming in. And even though he's kind of looking, he's not looking far enough off into that, the right side of the image for it to be off-putting at all. So I think it's a great.
Well, the thing I tell my students about that is generally, yeah.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. You generally want space in front, but. If you do this, like what I did, it creates tension, mm-hmm. right? So you get to decide, you know, do you want them to have space to look into or do you want to create that little bit of tension? I mean, I framed it this way because partly I wanted to have the window in there, right? And the other part was that there was an opening just to the right, so I wanted to crop that out. And I kind of liked putting him in that bottom right-hand corner in terms of compositionally. He was opposing Madman. Like he actually has a second name. He calls himself Tyra, like Tyra Banks. Uh-huh. And you'll notice that his fingernails are purple. So, you know, you can get an idea of his personality. He's very flamboyant and, you know, he would just go from one pose to the other. And I directed him a little bit, but this is all his pose.
Love it. Adam.
I like it too. I really like the color combination too. Like, again, that stands out for me. And you kind of know this wasn't taken in Vancouver. You know, just like the architecture, like, you know, kind of is a little bit of a tell. And I love the color mix with the yellow and the blue. So, no, it all works really nicely. I like it a lot. And like Al said, you know, the unconventional totally works in this picture. So,
yeah, it balances out nicely with the window on that other side.
Yeah, the yellow frame kind of. Yeah.
And with the moon right above him kind of goes in that. Okay, now let's get to the negative parts. No.
Okay.
Just
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Adam, let's have a look at your photo.
My photo in my living room last night, this is what I came up with. I said to my daughter, this is my 7.5-year-old daughter, Sarah, Darlene. And she likes to pose these days. My son, who is 5, not so much. So she was all on board for doing a little miniature photo shoot. So I did this in my living room. I just killed all the ambient light. I hadn't used my flashes in a while. I got a studio strobe, I don't know, 6 months ago, and I love that when I want a quick portrait and it's dark outside. So I said, okay, I'm going to just use regular strobes. I'm not pulling out or regular speed lights. I'm not going to pull out the big strobe. And I did some makeshift potato chip cans that I make as little strip lights. So they're basically like electric taped over all but just like one sort of straight line. So again, kind of like miniature softboxes. And I have one on either side kind of behind her that is going to light her hair. And then I have another speed light in a small softbox with a grid on it so that I can keep from lighting up everything else in the back room, because there's couches. My son's standing about 5 feet behind her. So I basically want to have nothing but the light on her hair and her face. And so I just had her kind of looking up and towards the gridded softbox a bit, just because that's where I wanted the softbox light to be in to hit her eyes, and got a smile, and that's it. That's all there was to it. So go ahead.
Cool. I like it. I think it's working. It's a little bit atypical for a child portrait as well, in that there's a fairly strong lighting ratio. So you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Typically with kids, I would do, like in the studio, I would do a little turn their head a certain way. I don't want to end up with half their face in the shadow. So I usually go, you know, like a lower ratio, but it works here. It's very dramatic, right? You've got that space sort of in front of her, like we talked about. Mine is the opposite of mine, right? So you've got her off to the side, and that works. The only thing I would suggest would be maybe turn the hair light down a tiny bit, just so it's not quite so bright, because it takes your eye right to her hair instead of her face. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and definitely I agree with you. In hindsight, yes, I would completely have turned down the light on the one side.
And you could probably control that in processing too a little bit.
Yes, also did not get to. this is straight out of camera, black and white in 38 seconds. But no, I agree. I'm looking at it. I thought, yeah, the light on the left side of her face, on the hair is to me right where I wanted it to be. And on the on the right side where she wanted to do that, she kept pulling the light across, or her hair across. And so, yeah, it ended up, the shot I liked the best, this one, it ended up being a little bit hot on her hair. So yeah, I could dress that up a little bit in post, but I have not done that.
I mean, the other thing about that too that I tell my students is sometimes the technical, like, don't get so hung up on the technical, right? If you've got a great expression and a great sort of feeling and emotion in your picture, just go with it, right? Like, I wouldn't interrupt a session that was going really well, that I was getting good expressions, especially from a child, to fix my light.
On my monitor, it again could be calibration. I do see your background.
Oh, I don't on mine, so.
That's what I was going to ask, Darlene. Do you see that, like, behind?
No, it's pure black, pure black.
Okay, so I could have the contrast lowered on mine, possibly, because I do see picture frames or whatever it is back there. Then the other, my other nitpick is, I'm seeing her eyes being a little soft compared to her hair. Is it possible?
Yeah, I wondered about that, too.
Again, it's possible. I thought I checked it quickly, and I thought it was very sharp on her eyelashes. But again, I don't remember. This was
what
late
aperture?
Last night. I think it's an f9.
Oh, so
on an 80. Yeah, exactly. Because I shot it in complete darkness. So the f9 I was thinking again was going to be enough of the depth of field. But again, just for the camera to grab focus in that. How dark the room was, I can't be 100% sure.
So just as a, like what I would do in a single portrait, maybe not so much with kids, but I tend to shoot a lot more wide open. Like I would probably shoot that at F4 because then I would know I'm going to throw my background out of focus. So even if it does show up a little bit, it's going to be blurry. And mm-hmm. just make sure you nail the focus. What focus modes are you using? Like, do you use back button
just,
focus?
Just, or? Yeah, back button and just in one shot.
Yeah, single point. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a trigger on the camera that shoots like a focus assist spread that usually is pretty good. And from my experience in shooting in the dark, usually again at an F9, this isn't moving. This is going to hit the focus bang on. The reason I didn't really worry about F4 versus F9 is because I wanted it to be sharp front to back, and I wanted to kill all the ambient light in the room. And so at F4, again wanting that background to be completely black, I didn't go there. Yeah,
right, makes sense. You said that it was black and white straight out of camera. So are you shooting?
Well, no. Like, well, I shot it for the purposes of black and white. So okay. It's just a raw image that, again, I have my sort of black and white sort of preset that I've kind of tweaked and, on the post-production. Yeah, and then I just basically went right to black and white. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I do like it, Adam. I wasn't snipping at you.
No, I like it too. But I do agree with the hair is a little bit too prominent because of how much light is on it.
Okay.
All right.
The other thing you could do is to bring your main light more sort of to camera right.
Okay, so more off.
So like right now it's camera left. More to the right, like where you're right, her left, right? Because then you'd be more like she's almost got butterfly lighting. Again, we're talking lighting patterns. You gotta go to the course. If you go more to the camera right, her left, you'll get more of a short lighting pattern as opposed to broad lighting her.
Right. No, that actually that main light is camera right, pretty far camera right. The reason that it looks like it's more lit from the left is because that sort of rear light, which is in a chip can, is too hot. So it's actually it's filling in on the other side of her face.
Well, if you look at the catch lights, you can tell what you're calling the main light is actually your fill light.
I know, because, exactly. Yeah, that wasn't the intention when I said it.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. So the power maybe just needs to be reversed.
Is that the power? Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha.
My head hurts, guys.
There you go.
Okay. Let's have a look at mine. Here's my son. Now,
love the toes.
Yeah, the feet's the best part for me.
Yeah?
Yeah,
love the toes.
Okay. What don't you love? I really encourage you both to take the gloves off on this one. Cuz I'm sour. I'm not sandbagging. I'm really sour. Like this might be the last photograph I ever take. I'm going to smash my camera and throw it out.
No, I honestly, this is one of those ones that it's cute baby. Like forget everything else because you tried to do way too much here. There's just way too much going on. Yeah. Cute baby in your Hawks jersey would have been just fine, cropped tighter. I don't know. It's just like you've got so many different things going on, but it's all saved by the fact that your son's got a super good expression and the toes sticking out. It's fine. It's good. It's cute. My kids looked at it and went, "Aw," so it achieves the effect. But you know, as a photograph, it's again, there's a lot of things going on here.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would agree with that. If you're going to keep all the stuff in, maybe add like an edge darkening to bring the focus back into him because there's a lot of light areas on the edges. And he's got a pretty high contrast ratio on his face too. Like a little more fill light would kind of lighten it up a little bit. Like when you have a high contrast like that, it's very dramatic, mm-hmm. which kind of doesn't fit with a cute little baby, right? Because no. You know, cute little babies are not dramatic, they're cute little babies. So you want to maybe give them a little more fill light.
This was basically the test shot. And this was one of the most frustrating experiences I've ever had in my life. Because I had asked my daughter, I had something very specific in mind. Because last week I took the photo of my son that I liked very much. The one I sent, we talked about last week, Adam.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, well, that's going to be something very similar. I don't want to do the exact same photo, but, you know, I wanted to have a contextual story in mind. I didn't want to just quickly snap one. And so I asked my daughter, who's 3 and a half. And I said, you know, hey, daddy has to take a photo today. Do you want to help him? No. Okay. Well, then I'll ask your brother. That's fine. And by ask your brother, I mean, just put him there because he can't.
Right. Right.
You know, and so I had, this is the whole idea is, you know, get in daddy's baseball uniform. And I didn't think that it would read by itself. The jersey would be by itself. It looks kind of goofy as it is. And so I basically sat him down and I thought, I don't want to use window light. We just got new curtains, like very kind of translucent white curtains. So I'm going to pull the curtains. I'm going to put a couple of speed lights outside, and I'm going to manipulate it, and I'm going to create my own window light, and it's going to look amazing. And so I get it set outside. I have one that I'm going to kind of shoot through a crack in the curtains. Mm-hmm. To just kind of create something on the background. I want to have a nice, interesting background. And then I'm going to
See, I was going to say, I don't like that thing on the background.
No. I don't like anything about this photo. And I even like my son in real life, but not in this photo. And that wasn't what I was going for. So basically, and then I had another flash up front coming through, full through the curtains to give us the nice window light. Mm-hmm. And I was going to balance the ratio nicely. That was my plan. So I got this all set up. This was the first test shot. Didn't like it. Went, oh, okay, great. Went to make some tweaks. And now all of a sudden my daughter wanted to get involved. And so she didn't want to get in the photo. She just wanted to stand in the window to block the light.
Nice.
And she wouldn't move. And so then finally I dragged her away, went to take the next, you know, test shot. And basically my batteries are dead because it's like, you know, -8 outside today. And I basically had, you know, one pop on the speed lights, and that was the end of that. So in the middle of all that, he also filled his diaper. So it was a big win.
Yeah.
And so I basically didn't get to take any more photos. I would never have put the baseboard there in the image. I would have gotten down much lower to the ground and basically shot this on a different angle. I would like to see his hands in the shot. And so those are some of the things I hated about this.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Is your wife a photographer?
No.
Does she like this picture?
She will.
Maybe.
Has she seen it?
I'm trying to think if she saw it today or not. She was there while I was taking it, so it might be spoiled.
My wife likes it. Okay, so there you go.
Does she?
Yeah. See, yeah. My experience, though, is... people who aren't photographers, like, so if you're trying to do photography as a portrait business, or anybody that's listening, right, we get all hung up on, like I said, the technical stuff, right? But if the technical goes wrong and you get the best expression of their kid that they've ever seen, mm-hmm. they don't care that your fill light didn't go off. They don't care, right? But if you have the perfect lighting and their kid looks like, you know, yesterday's dog food because he's screaming or puking or whatever, they don't want it, right? So technique needs to disappear, and when you're talking portraits, it's all about the person that's in the picture.
True. However, when you are shooting your own kid, no, but when you're shooting your own kid, you have access to all the time, and you do have like 1,000 better pictures. Yeah.
So maybe you become pickier. Yeah.
True.
I don't have kids. I got fur babies, but I have a niece who's 4, and sometimes she likes her picture taken. She's into dancing and ballet, and she puts on her little, you know, she had a little dance recital, and I took pictures, but then we went outside at intermission. Do you think she would stand still and let me take? Sometimes she'll give me the hand. Like, she'll literally give me the hand. It's like, no photos, Auntie.
Oh, wow. Now, I go through the exact same thing with my daughter, and I think, Adam, you've been through that phase, too.
Yeah. Well, now with my son, I can't get a picture of him.
Right. Well, that's the thing with my daughter. I feel the same way. The irony being is that for every year for her birthday, my wife and I make her a photo album. Like, we actually get the photos printed, glue them in, and write things in the album, you know, old school. She loves looking through them. Like, let's look at the photos. And I'm trying to tell her that for her next birthday, she's not getting one.
Because you don't let me take any photos.
Yeah. You can have a bunch of pictures of your brother. That's what you can have.
Right.
Right now. Which, at 3 and a half, she doesn't really understand. which is upsetting.
So I did, when my nephew was three, so this would be the brother of the other girl, when he was three, I went and spent the afternoon at their house, and I did, like, day in the life of my nephew, right? Mm-hmm. And followed him around, and they went and got a haircut, so I photographed that, and he's playing outside with his you know, bike or scooter or whatever, and my sister was watering the plants outside, and he decided to start running through the hose, and he got soaking wet, and then we go in the backyard, and she takes his clothes off, and he drops the towel and runs away. So of course I get a picture of his bare butt, right? So it actually took me like almost 2 years to make the photo album. So yeah, don't do that. Keep photos of your kids. That's good. I made the photo album, gave it to my sister for Mother's Day. And so we're looking through it, and the bare butt photo comes up, and he's like, "Ah, Auntie, it's my butt. Why did you take a picture? Why did you take that picture of my butt?" I said, "Well, why did you drop your towel and run around naked?"
Yeah.
So he was funny. But then his friends came over, and what does he do? First thing he does is shows him a picture of his butt. So he wasn't that embarrassed.
Yeah, I think I have a few of those. Well, my kids. Exact same one, so... Bottom line is, you're absolutely right. I would never do. I didn't want to do the high contrast on his face. If I was going to take any more photos, I'd do it differently. That's what I'm telling you. But this is it. Shutting her down.
It's still cute.
Yeah. It is still cute. My daughter actually said, because my kids are very into who wins the photo challenge. They care. Mm-hmm. They said that, you know, your picture's cuter, but my picture's better. Both Jack and Sarah agreed that my picture was better. So okay. There's that. Oh, and I just checked in the full res, and the eyes are completely sharp. So I don't know why it doesn't look that way in the shrunk down version, because they're completely sharp. So there. So then I definitely win. I definitely win.
I think
except for our guest. I lose to our guest.
Sure.
I was gonna say, I didn't know this was a contest. I might
have no, it's a contest.
More effort into it.
Yeah, we have we keep score. Yeah, uh-huh. We keep score. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, then I'm up with the 84-year-old woman from Peru's portrait. Then,
well, save it for next.
Tell me it was a contest. All right.
So
where do we go to sign up for a course or learn this?
We're talking a little bit about portraits right now, Adam.
Oh, we're not done.
Well, no, we need a little takeaway.
I'm halfway out the door.
Oh, I know. So we'll keep this part short. There we go.
Okay.
So this week's topic is a simple technique for portraits. So, Darlene, if you want to give us a teaser about what people can expect from the lighting course,
sure.
Simple takeaway. What are some simple or some simple techniques that people should look to get started?
Well, we kind of mentioned a couple of them already, which is. I recommend, if you're starting in portraits and you've never done any portrait lighting before, start with available light. I've seen people come to my class, and people that had purchased like studio lights and actually returned them because they couldn't figure out how to use them and make it work. They came to my class, learned the lighting patterns and the techniques about, like, learn about the face, learn about how to, you know, work with people as well, because there's a lot to doing portraits besides setting up a couple of lights, right? I teach about what lens to use to flatter people. I talk about how to pose people to flatter them. I talk about, you know, like we said, the short lighting versus the broad lighting on their face to make people look slimmer or taller or, you know, however it is they want to look. So we go through all of that in the course, right from really basic stuff. And we go through it in little pieces. So things that I would recommend starting with is A, available light. Don't complicate your life. Get a reflector and a window. Start there. B is, while you're working with natural light, it happens outdoors as well as inside. So a lot of times people will go outside and they'll get, you know, confused, or they're shooting at midday and they'll say, well, the light is lousy. What can I do here? And I talk about finding the good light. So we talked about open shade, right? So get under like a porch or an overhang, or get in a doorway or something where you can get your subject in the shade and get that overhead light off of them, because what happens when you have overbright sun, you're going to end up with dark eye sockets, especially with people that have deep set eyes, you know, like parents something. So get them underneath something on overhang. Even a big tree branch will be helpful. How's that?
You dropped out a little bit there. I think I understood everything, Adam.
Also understood.
Okay, good. Yeah, open shade, that's great. Great place to start if you're outside. And I tell everybody, you know, even with a point and shoot with your iPhone, look for window light. Because most often, whenever I am actually lighting something, I'm trying to mimic window light because mm-hmm. it's that good.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I always tell people too, and even my mother with her little point and shoot, when she wants to take my photo, is step back and zoom in, because you're going to flatter the person more than getting closer with a wider lens.
So do you have a favorite go-to lens on your DSLR for portraits?
On my Canon, I use my 85 a lot. I have the 85-1.8. I use that a lot. And I have the 24-105, and I tend to use it sort of at the high end towards the 100 end. Depends if I'm doing a single portrait or a group, but if I'm talking one person or two people, usually it's 85 to 100 in that range.
You're speaking our language. Adam and I both keep the 85 on our cameras pretty much at all times.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, and we've had a lot of listeners say that, you know, listening to us rave about them, that they've also purchased that lens, and nobody is disappointed.
No, it's great. I mean, it's not an expensive lens. It's not an L series, but, you know, if you're going to shoot wide open, this is the thing I have a big discussion in my classes about. Should you put filters, UV filters on your lenses? The argument is, you know, I use them to protect the front of my lens. And if I'm shooting a 2.8 lens at 2.8, if there's a flaw in the filter, it's not going to show up. So there's another L. Right. Maybe that's a whole other topic of discussion.
Do you use a UV filter?
I do on my expensive lenses, yeah.
So where does the 85 mil fall?
I have one on there.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's still a $600 lens, right? So put a $50 filter on and it's still less expensive to replace a filter because you dropped it or, you know, especially for travel stuff too. Like, you know, I tell people, we go to the beach. If it's windy and you got like sand coming at you, you literally sandblast your lens.
That's true. That's true. I Adam and I both shoot with lens hoods on the 85.
I use that too.
No filter. We go filterless. Yeah.
I was going to leave that part out, Adam.
I like to live on the edge of danger. Yeah. Also, we paid substantially less for our 85 millimeter than you did. So, ha ha.
Well, I paid less than that too because I bought it from a friend. Ha ha. Oh.
It's getting weird, Adam.
Yeah, it is. Sorry.
Yeah. No, we also got ours from America, right?
Yeah, the United States of America. Mm-hmm. I think we only paid about, I want to say, just around $300. So, yeah,
so I was going to say, I thought $350 was sounded about right.
Yeah. So, but maybe it's gone up. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I think new it's between $500 and $600.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we bought ours new too, so we really made out well.
Ooh.
And the dollar was high back then.
And the dollar was high. Wow. Yeah. Don't buy it now. Nobody should buy it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Just no. Just sketch things with charcoal. Save yourself the money. Yeah.
I should mention though, like if people are using a crop sensor camera, right? It's going to be longer than like you're using a 5D2 and I'm using a 5D3, mm-hmm. right? So they may even, if they can't afford the 85, they might even want to look at the 50-1.8, which is like $100, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And it's going to be like a 75 on their camera. So it's a good start.
That's where I got my start. My first prime lens in digital was the 50 mil. And so was Adam's too, wasn't it?
Yep. First prime. Yep.
And I think we both, you know, beat the crap out of those until they fell apart and then, you know, moved on. And to the point now where I even shoot with my 85 on my old 40D, which will not die. At 40D, I take it anywhere. Like it has died a couple times. I basically went to throw it out and it sprung back to life. To the point that I take it where I don't care where I take it. Like I'll take it to the beach, wherever. I'll leave it at the beach while I go swimming. I don't care. It's no one's mm-hmm. taking it. But I will also take the 85 mil on that at the beach. When you're outside, you get some great results. Inside, tough.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about the Fuji that I just bought, the X-T1. Because I do like it. The reason I chose the Fuji, because I looked at mirrorless for a really long time, especially like for travel stuff, because I wanted to downsize. So I looked at mirrorless for a really long time, tried the Sonys. I didn't like all the menu system. I like buttons and dials. I'm like old school, right? Mm-hmm. I looked at the Olympus, which I actually ended up using for a couple of months in Nicaragua. Again, long story. But I really like the Olympus, the way it handles. It's just got a slightly smaller sensor. But what I like about the Fuji is with the lens that you buy with it, the 18 to 135, it's waterproof. It's weather resistant.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
You can actually pour water over it. Like we
did you? Oh, no.
We hit rain. It was completely wet. I was soaking wet. The camera was soaking wet. Kept shooting. So it passed the test.
Nice.
I didn't submerge it, you know, didn't go diving or anything, but it's not set up for submersing, but it's weather sealed and it's weather resistant is what they say. Yeah. Check YouTube. There's actually videos of people pouring glasses of water over it.
Wow. I can't say I'd be doing that myself.
No, I didn't try that, but when it was raining, I was like, well, you know, I'm going to shoot, so I did.
Wonderful. Adam.
Yes.
We have a photo challenge for next week.
Do you have one?
No, I don't really.
Oh, no.
Oh, should I pick one?
Yeah.
How about something we did a lot of in Cuba? Panning.
Panning?
Ooh. Yeah.
Like for gold?
No.
Okay, I got it.
The panning technique, you know, panning technique. Like when you're shooting moving traffic and you make the background blurry, but the car is not.
Don't tell Adam. He doesn't know what it is.
Oh, no, I'm going to Google it. I'll Google it.
I have an article on my site. I'll send you a link.
Okay, go. Great.
I'll even give the how-to. People can read about how to do it, and then they can just go do it.
Sounds great.
I think people.
I love panning. It's fun. People were trying it on our trip, and like I said, it's the perfect time in Cuba because you got all these great cars going by, right? People were panning like chickens and stuff. It's crazy. Right.
Challenge accepted.
Yes. All right.
Darlene, where can people find you and all the stuff you just talked about?
They can find me and the photo tours and the portrait lighting course and the panning article all on Digital Photo Mentor. .com. You can find me and on Google Plus under my name.
Okay. And Adam.
Yes.
Same question to you. Where can people find your digital lighting course?
Soon to be on adamschwartz.ca.
Right. We'll all sit and look for that.
Yeah. Right. And your stuff?
And my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where we're going to post all the links to the stuff we just talked about. So that's it.
Sweet.
For Darlene and for Adam, until next week, get out there and make better photos.